5 minutes, not yet able to walk in. All the while, I could feel my mother's sword buzzing, which was one of the reasons I hadn't yet knocked. Not the only reason, but one of them. "You should have learned by now," I murmured to the monster, "that I'm not going to let happen what you want to happen." I don't know if it was chastised or merely biding its time, but the throb of magic turned to a dull roar that I could manage. As ready as I was likely to be, I knocked.
"Come in,"
he said, and I opened it, found him alone and at his desk. He wore a dark suit with a crisp white shirt beneath. The top button opened to reveal the gleam of his Cadogan medal. He smiled when I walked in, but there was caution in his eyes that I hadn't seen before, and that broke my heart a little.
"Is it already time for the meeting?"
he asked, and glanced at his wristwatch. As with his vehicles, he preferred the old-fashioned kind. "Not yet. I'm a little early." I closed the door. "Can we talk?"
"Of course."
He rose, came around the desk, and gestured to the sitting area. There was something formal in his manner that made me sad and uncomfortable. Had I completely screwed up our relationship? He sat down on the leather couch, and I did the same, sitting at an angle so I could see him. "I wanted to apologize for the Cadogan House novitiate thing. I'd meant to talk to you about it before it came up with the Ombudsman, but I didn't, and that was my fault, and it was a really crappy thing to do, and I'm really sorry."
"I appreciate that," he said,
and a heavy and awkward silence filled the room.
"Did you have a good childhood?"
The question startled and appalled me. "What? Of course I did."
"We didn't exactly have good role models for parenting, your mother and I. And we tried so carefully to think of everything a human child would need, and everything a vampire child might."
Tears blossomed and I worked to push them back, afraid if they fell I'd slip into full sobbing. "I had a great childhood," I said again. "I know I was loved and supported, that if I fell, you'd help me back up. Mom helped me get past my chocolate chip cookie phase and learn the joy of a balanced diet, and you helped me understand the joy of rules and procedures." He knew I meant that mostly seriously, and his grin was full and utterly relieved.
"Without rules, chaos."
"No argument," I said, thinking of Connor and his penchant, at least as a kid, for doing whatever the hell he wanted.
"I was thrown," my father said. "We didn't fail to commend you because of an oversight, because we forgot. We believed, considered, you to be a full member of the house, and I am monumentally sorry that we were wrong, even if only technically."
He cleared his throat.
"Do you want to be commended?"
And I thought we'd gotten through the awkward part. For a moment, silence hung heavily in the air. I didn't have an honest answer, and I didn't want to lie. Finally, he held up a hand, smiled.
"Don't answer that. I will apologize for putting you on the spot. I love you and I love your mother with all my heart. I love this house as well. It is neither my child nor my wife, but it is..."
He seemed to struggle with the word. "It's yours," I said simply, and offered him a smile. "And that's all there is to it."
"Yes," he said with a relieved smile. "It is mine. And while your mother and I would both love to have you as an official member of this house, that decision is yours to make as you prefer."
"And if I choose Navarre?" I asked with a grin. He was silent for a moment, lip curled just a little bit.
"There's no accounting for taste."
I grinned at him. Typical Cadogan response.
"Come here,"
my father said, and opened his arms. And I went willingly. The tension had evaporated when Margot, the house's chef, rolled a wheeled cart into my father's office. It was stacked with gorgeous trays of food and smelled like sugar and bacon. My mother stepped into the room behind her.
"As always," my father said, "your mother's timing is impeccable."
"She followed the scent of bacon," Margot said, offering me a wink as she began placing trays and baskets on the conference table. "You're all hilarious," she said, snatching a piece of bacon from one of Margot's baskets. She glanced at us as she chewed, and I gave her a nod and a smile. Outside, there was chaos, but our family was okay. Since coffee would only improve things, I fixed myself a mug and moved to the sitting area while we waited for the cavalry to arrive. They showed up in increments. Petra and Yoon, then Theo, then Gabriel, Connor, and Miranda. I wasn't sad to see that Dearborn had skipped the meeting, and assumed we'd have to invite the press and the mayor to get him to actually attend. I hadn't expected to see Miranda, and was surprised she'd walk willingly into a house of vampires, given her issues with us. Connor wore his uniform again today, jeans, boots, and a snug t-shirt under a fitted motorcycle jacket. There was dark stubble on his face, which made his eyes glow brighter, and he carried his dark motorcycle helmet. He headed straight for me, and I wasn't entirely surprised by the quick flash of emotion in Miranda's eyes. Suspicion, anger, and maybe some hurt. So Miranda had feelings for Connor, the man she wanted to best for control of the pack. Or maybe share control of the pack. I could sympathize, and shifted my gaze back to Connor. He looked like a model in a cologne ad. Sexy and seductive and arrogant. These were not comfortable feelings for me, especially in my father's office. He put his helmet on the coffee table and looked down at me, expression unfathomable.
"You keep taking on the fairies."
"Not by choice. What's wrong?" He sat down on the opposite couch.
"With what?"
"With you. You look tired, and you sound grouchy."
"It's been a long night."
He ran a hand through his hair, with shifted muscles in his arms.
"Riley's managing, but that's putting a shine on it. It's not a great situation."
"I think we're getting closer. We just need a little more time." "And a little more luck wouldn't hurt." Gabriel walked to the sitting area, stirred his coffee with the familiar clink of spoon against ceramic.
"Facing down fairies on network television?"
"Wrong place, wrong time," I said.
"Or right place, right time,"
Yoon said, smiling as he walked toward us. He glanced at my parents.
"You have a very thoughtful and capable daughter." "And she's a very good fighter," Theo added with a grin. "Agreed on all counts," my father said, then nodded at Yoon. "We're here to support your efforts, so we're ready when you are."
"We're ready,"
Yoon said. Then he nodded at Theo, passing the figurative torch.
"I'll go,"
Theo said. He verbally reviewed our visit to the castle, the fight in Grant Park, and what we'd seen on the surveillance video.
"We need to find Claudia," Connor said, and Yoon nodded. "We suspect this might be Ruadon's reaction to the fairy's diminishing magic," Yoon said. "Maybe he isn't satisfied with how Claudia's managed the fairies since the Egregore, and thinks they should be doing more to increase their power, not let it slip away."
Gabriel looked at the photograph of the chained fairy queen Petra had uploaded to the monitor.
"And he's shoved her aside so he can do what he wants." "That's the current theory,"
Yoon said. "It's logical," my mother said. "But why the ley line conjunction? Why do they need that much power? What are they planning to use it for?"
"A weapon?" Connor suggested. "A spell?" "Whatever it is," Yoon said, "it's big.
something that requires a lot of power, and something it appears they haven't yet managed to pull off. They do appear to have figured out how to move along the ley lines, to appear and disappear by accessing the line's power.
That's a new skill, my father agreed. I've never seen it.
I presume you haven't been able to narrow down their location.
Not yet, Yoon said.
The castle and tower are empty. Officers have traversed the city above the ley lines several times, but the fairies haven't been spotted inside the city limits, or outside it in the jurisdictions we've convinced to check.
They have to be somewhere, Connor said. They can't just disappear.
They'll go back to Grant Park, Gabriel said. If they need the conjunction, the power, to pull off whatever they're planning for, they'll try again.
Yoon nodded.
Anticipating that, we've posted guards.
Guards may not be enough, my father said. Notwithstanding their disappearing act, they have no compunction about violence.
They would have only backed off tonight because they chose to do so, because they decided that's what was in their best interest, not because they were afraid of a fight.
Precautions will be taken, Yoon said, but we can't simply concede the ground and let them make their magic, especially when we don't know what magic it is. That puts humans, supernaturals, and the city itself at risk.
The pack is aware of the situation, Gabriel said. We've kept them apprised in the event they need to be ready to respond.
Good, Yoon said.
When are you leaving? My father asked.
Tomorrow, Gabriel said, and the words settled in my gut like a stone.
But I'm not leaving. Other members of the pack are, and Connor is leading them. And they've expressed some concern about leaving before Riley's exonerated.
We need direct evidence, Yoon said.
So you've said.
This time Gabriel's tone was short.
What about the European delegates? Theo asked.
We have not been able to convince the delegates to reconvene the talks, my father said.
Since the most recent attacks occurred in France, they believe the French houses need to be present for any further discussions to be productive.
I'm inclined to agree with them. But they haven't left yet, so there is still a chance.
Petra's pocket began to buzz. She pulled out her screen, checked it.
They found the fairy's SUV, the one we saw Claudia in. It's parked outside.
She paused to swipe and review.
Looks like St. Adelphus Church.
She's in a church? I wondered. That seems odd. I mean, fairies aren't religious, are they?
St. Adelphus is abandoned, Theo said, rising. I've been inside on an architecture tour. There's legal wrangling about its disposition, so it hasn't been torn down yet, but it's not in good shape.
Where is it? Yoon asked.
Near West Side, Theo said. Not far from the United Center.
The vehicle hasn't moved since it parked there, Petra said, gaze on her screen.
Did they really abandon the vehicle? I wondered. Or are they staying there to keep an eye on her?
It's not unusual to keep alive the regent you've deposed, my father said. Killing her risks turning the rebellion against them.
So they're keeping an eye on her, Yoon said. Taking care of her, at least minimally. And keeping her out of Ruadon's way.
We go in quietly, Theo offered. No CPD, no uniforms. We incapacitate the guards, get her out, get gone.
Do it, Yoon said, nodding at Theo.
Sending tracking data to you, Petra said, and Theo's pocket beeped.
I could use backup, Theo said and looked at me.
Sure, I'll go, I agreed. I'd started this and was ready to finish it, and I didn't mind getting out of Cadogan sooner rather than later. There was too much magic here. I looked at my parents, who'd managed to stay silent at my offer. I can help.
It's not our objection to make, my mother said, putting a hand over my father's and squeezing.
You're an adult,
and it's your decision. She slid her gaze to Yoon. Assuming the Ombudsman's office approves.
Go, Yoon said with a nod. But try to stay out of trouble, and away from cameras.
We got coffee to go, checked weapons, and coordinated reporting. Theo was popping his screen onto the dashboard of his car, while I slid my scabbarded katana inside. I looked up, found Connor a dozen feet away, putting his helmet on his bike. I realized this was probably the last time I'd see him before he left for Alaska. It might be the last time I'd see him at all. And that possibility put a hollow feeling in my chest. I'll be right back, I told Theo, and walked toward Connor. Hey, I said when I reached him, and kept a safe distance between us. Not that it mattered. Magic still buzzed in the air between us, tense and heated and angry and sad.
Hey, he said.
You're leaving tomorrow. He looked at me.
The pack needs to go, and they need someone to lead. That's me.
His tone was defensive. Because you want to be Apex.
Because I will be Apex, he said.
I tried for a smile. There will probably be wine, women, and song on the way, so that doesn't hurt. I'd meant it as a joke, as a way to loosen the tension between us. But I regretted the words the instant I'd said them, and especially when I saw heat flash in his eyes.
You know this isn't about partying.
I know, I said. I'm sorry. It was... I'm sorry. I find myself saying that a lot lately, because I'm feeling a little unbalanced here.
You aren't the only one, he said. I didn't expect you, Lise.
Not a big deal, I said with a smile I forced into position. I'll probably be heading back to Paris soon, and you've got the pack to focus on. I hope you find what you're looking for. His jaw clenched, but he didn't speak.
Elisa?
I glanced back at Theo.
You ready?
He asked.
We don't know how long the SUV will be there. We need to go.
Yeah, I said, then looked back at Connor, gave him as much of a smile as I could manage. Which wasn't much. Goodbye, Connor. Stay safe out there. His eyes were dark, stormy, and unfathomable, and he didn't say a word. 20. Seconds later, I was in Theo's car, replaying every word I'd said to Connor and wondering if they'd sounded as lame aloud as they did in my head, and berating myself for sounding ridiculous was somehow easier than dealing with the possibility I might not see Connor again. So I stayed in that space.
Are you all right?
I'm fine, I said. We were driving west on Madison, the United Center, a long, hulking building in front of us. It was time to focus. Just as I made up my mind to do that, the road ahead seemed to shimmer. I looked at the sky, thinking clouds had passed over the full moon and I'd just seen a mirage, some kind of optical trick. But the moon was high and clear. I blinked, looked down again, and watched solid asphalt ripple like water. Theo, I quietly said, leaning forward with hands on the dashboard.
I see it, he said, and leaned forward over the steering wheel to peer into the darkness.
The ripple started again 30 feet in front of us, and the road waved, just like grass.
What the hell is that?
Theo asked.
I don't know.
He pulled the car to a stop, and we both climbed out and walked into the path of the headlights.
Oh, shit,
Theo said quietly. A carpet of thick and waving grass had grown over the road, which was no longer really a road, but a soft and undulating hill that stretched a full quarter mile in front of us. In that stretch, the streetlights were gone. The electric poles, the asphalt, the sidewalk, the yellow lines. all of it replaced with waving grass and air that felt like magic.
"We are not seeing this," I said quietly. "We are not seeing this."
"Elisa." I ripped my gaze away to look at Theo, followed the direction of his gaze. The problem wasn't just this quarter mile of Madison. The grass, the hill, the absence of everything modern was spreading. It reached the United Center, and the building began to simply disappear. Floor by floor, the concrete and glass were replaced by waving grass, then empty air. Another hill, soft and rounded, began to rise, arcing into the space where the enormous arena had stood. And above it all, the cold and heavy weight of old magic.
This can't be real.
I didn't dare move close enough to touch the grass, afraid the magic would infect me, just as it had spread down the road, across the street, and over the building.
"Do you know what this is?"
Theo asked quietly. His tone said he already knew. I didn't know, not for sure, because I couldn't figure out how I was seeing what I was seeing. But hadn't we heard my mother's story? Hadn't she told us about exactly this? And hadn't the fairies been trying to work some unknown, big magic?
"It's the Greenland," I said quietly,
afraid the words would disturb it, would make it aware of our presence, and we'd be sucked into the spell.
"The ancient home of the fairies."
Theo pulled out his screen, scanned what had been the easternmost half of the building, sent pictures and video to Yoon. We ran back to the car. With a squeal of rubber on asphalt, Theo made a U-turn and hauled back down Madison until he found a clear path north toward the church.
"Is this why they were in Grant Park?"
I asked, gripping the tiny dashboard as the car swung around. "Using the ley lines? To bring the Greenland here?"
"I don't know," Theo said.
He found a strip of asphalt, and we skirted the hills in silence, watching.
"Maybe. But the fairies aren't in Grant Park right now, so how are they doing it?"
"A different ley line? A different conjunction?"
"There isn't another conjunction near Chicago." "There's the vehicle," he said as the light on the tracking program blinked faster.
The church, a rectangle of white stone with a domed top, squatted in the corner of a two-block span of parking lot. In the front, two pairs of columns flanked the front doors and were topped by a triangular pediment. The entrance faced a park. The side of the church faced another parking lot, which made the building, with its boarded windows and overgrown trees, seem even lonelier. The SUV sat outside, dark and empty. Theo parked a block down, and we climbed quietly out of the car. I belted on my katana in the light of the moon. And that was a disadvantage on this cover-free street. We wouldn't be able to hug the shadows to get closer to the building. On the other hand, no lights shone from inside the church, so it might give us more visibility once we made it in. Theo checked the chamber on the gun he'd holstered at his waist.
"What's the layout of the church?" I asked quietly.
"Doors on the front, east side. Doors open into a lobby, and the sanctuary's directly behind that. It's a big space with a domed ceiling and arches along the sides. The basement has classrooms and offices."
"Most likely location?"
"I'm honestly not sure," he said, hands on his hips as he looked over the church. "What's the most likely place to store the fairy queen you're attempting to peacefully depose?"
"Fair point.
Side door?"
I scanned the building, looking for easy ingress. An open window, missing plywood, something that would get me in quietly.
"Let me get closer. I might be able to work something."
"Then let's move," he said quietly,
and we got low and jogged quickly toward the building, hands on our weapons to keep them from bouncing.
We crossed the street, ducked into the shadow of the building.
Follow me, I said, and slipped quietly down the sidewalk.
Everything on this side of the building looked carefully boarded, so I turned the corner. There'd once been a fire escape, but it stood in a hulking pile of steel behind the church, the exits boarded. But fairies had gotten into the building, and with Claudia, so there had to be a way. If it were me, I'd have found a way to sneak in, then unlocked the front doors from the inside so she could be carried in. That's what I was looking for, the sneak. I found it around the next corner. A plywood sheet covering a basement window had been pulled away. It still leaned against the window, but wasn't attached. The fairy had probably taken it down, slipped inside, then come back later to move it back into position, but hadn't bothered to reaffix it to the facade. That's all we needed. We each picked up a side, maneuvered it away from the window. The glass was dirty, and the room behind it was dark. It was a single-hung window with a simple sliding lock. Theo offered a pocket knife before I could ask for it. I flipped it out, inserted the blade between the sash and the lock. Old paint chipped away and fluttered to the ground like snow, until I heard the click, then handed the knife back to Leo. I confirmed he was ready, and pushed open the sash. The window's screech was loud as a banshee's cry. Instinctively, we flattened ourselves against the building, waited for the bob of a flashlight, the sound of movement and investigation. But there was only silence, only darkness. Surely the fairies weren't all sleeping, not when they were supposed to be guarding Claudia, or imprisoning her. I slipped into the window, dropped soundlessly to the floor, offered a hand as Theo followed. It was a classroom for kids. The toys and materials were long gone, but there were still marks on a chalkboard that stood in the corner, still a faded wallpaper border of cartoon pencils along the top of the wall. It smelled like dust and mold and rain. We emerged into the hallway, cleared each room as we moved toward the stairs. There was no sign of the fairies down here. No movement, no sound. No footsteps in the dust and detritus on the floor. They weren't in the basement, so they had to be upstairs. We waited at the edge of the staircase, straining to listen for sounds. And then I heard singing somewhere above us. A man's voice, too far away to figure out the words. But the sound was sad and quiet, like an old-fashioned lullaby. And it made standing in this dilapidated church basement, with the remnants of childhood, even creepier. I looked at Theo, cupped a hand behind my ear. He nodded, and looked as disturbed as I felt.
I'm going to need a drink after this, Theo whispered, then put a hand on the butt of his weapon and pointed to the stairs.
Being immortal, I took point. I wasn't about to sacrifice Theo, or incur Yoon's wrath, if the fairies heard us coming. The stairs opened into the back of the sanctuary. The room was large and open, moonlight filtering through the stained glass in the dome to spread red and gold and green across the floor. There was no furniture, just detritus and decay. Paint flaked away from murals on the walls, tufts of drywall where animals had scraped through, and scraps of paper that blew in from other parts of the building. Claudia lay on a cot in the middle of the room, strawberry blonde hair spilling onto the floor, hands pressed together atop her chest like a princess waiting for a kiss to interrupt her slumber. There were tall candelabra at the end of the cot, probably borrowed from the church. A fairy in black fatigues and boots, and carrying a very large gun, stood between Claudia and the front door, body alert. He was the only guard I saw, but it was unlikely there'd be only one. Even fairies had to sleep. There'd have to be someone to take a shift here and there. I didn't realize where the second fairy was until a muzzle was pressed against my back.
Hello, bloodletter.
The voice was female,
and carried a whisper of Ireland in it. Theo was only a couple of feet away, but steady enough to watch, to wait. I met his gaze, gave him a small smile. "Move forward," she said. "Both of you." We stepped into the sanctuary, her gun still at my back, Theo beside me.
2 feet to your left, I said quietly.
He didn't need to ask why. Theo was moving before the fairy understood what I'd asked for. Space to move. I turned with lightning speed, slapped away the fairy's gun, and threw up a side kick that had her stumbling forward in surprise.
"I think you've got this," Theo asked, picking up the gun. "You want?"
"I'm good," I said, and used a forearm to block the jab the fairy attempted with her left hand. Theo pulled out his weapon, strode toward the other fairy and the queen who lay before him. The fairy advanced, fury tightening her features, as I moved backward into the sanctuary. If we were going to fight, I wanted more room to do it.
"You won't win this," she said, with what sounded like deep felt loathing. "Bloodletters never do, not when we're involved."
She stepped forward, tried a right cross. I bobbed to avoid it, then turned into a crescent kick that she met with a high-handed block. Bone met bone and sent pain ringing up my shin. But the monster didn't mind pain. Pain was proof of life, of existence, a reminder that it was, even if it was trapped inside me.
"You've got some skills," she said,
advancing again. She was a sturdy woman with pale skin, dark hair in a sleek bun, and brown eyes. Barrel-chested and strong, she put some force behind her blocks.
"But so do we, and we need it more."
"Need what?"
"Our lives back. Our kingdom back. We've been under your thumb too long."
By kingdom, I assumed she meant the Greenland. "How are you under our thumb?" I asked, stepping backward. She was moving me closer to the wall, and I was fine with letting her believe she was controlling my retreat.
"Bloodletters rule Chicago," she said, a corner of her mouth lifting.
"Humans rule Chicago. Mayor, city council, population.
They're manipulated by vampires, controlled by bloodletters."
"That's absolutely incorrect. If it had been true, I'd be giving Yoon directions, not the other way around." My back hit the wall, and her smile grew wider.
"A brave little vampire to walk in here, but not brave enough to fight."
The anger that flooded me pushed the monster forward. Maybe I should give it a chance, I thought. Give it an opportunity to fight and play. So I let the monster step into me, and I slid back inside and watched it happen. I pivoted, pushed a foot against the wall, flipped backward over the fairy. She turned, her breath a shocked exhalation, and watched me land to face her again. "Some skills," I said, smiling fiercely. The monster moved forward with a right hook the fairy didn't manage to avoid, then an uppercut to the jaw that snapped the fairy's head back. She roared in pain, and it took her a moment to find her balance again. The monster wasn't interested in waiting, and advanced. A kick to move the fairy backward, to give the fairy her turn against the wall. And then the real work began. Punches to the gut, the jaw, a kick to the ribs, then another. The fairy tried to get a foot between mine, to twist me up and bring me down, but I managed to stay on my feet. A jab that knocked her head back. The fairy's head bobbled, and she fell to her knees. But that didn't stop the monster. Not even when the fairy's eyes rolled back. One kick to the ribs, then two, then another.
"Elisa!"
Chicago didn't belong to fairies or vampires. It belonged to the egregore, and the fairies didn't have a right to destroy it.
"Elisa, stop!"
Theo's hand gripped tightly around my arm,
and he yanked me away. I stumbled, also not quite solid on my feet, and had to bend over, hands on my knees, to keep bile from rising.
"It's all right," I said, and held up a hand to keep him back.
"Give me a minute."
"Go back," I willed it, demanded, but the monster fought me, waves of anger and aggression spearing forward. I closed my eyes, had to concentrate fiercely to keep my stomach from heaving and my mind in place, to take back control and keep it in my hands. This was a price of the power. The monster didn't like being pushed back down again, into the place where it had to question its own existence. When the nausea passed, I stood up again, glanced back. The fairy was on the ground, unconscious, her right eye swollen and dark, her lip bleeding, but her chest rising and falling. I hadn't killed her. While I understood death, and understood now that it was inevitable in war, I found that to be a relief. My hands stung with pain. I looked down, found the knuckles battered and bleeding. But I was a vampire, and the wounds would heal quickly enough.
"Are you okay?"
Theo asked. The look on his face said he genuinely wasn't sure.
"I'm fine."
I looked back, found the fairy he'd also knocked unconscious.
That made me feel so much better, it nearly brought tears to my eyes. "We need to get Claudia out of here," Theo said, and I nodded.
"I'll get the door," I said, and took his hand when he offered one, pulled me to my feet. Theo went to Claudia. I went to the small lobby and found the front door barred from the inside. I pulled up the long piece of steel, tossed it aside, turned deadbolts in the rotting wood, and pushed the door open. The wash of fresh air, of air that was mostly free of magic, felt glorious. "Cadogan House is closer than the Ombud's office," I said as Theo carried Claudia through. "And we've got a doctor."
"Then that's where we'll go. You'd better make the call."
"Car first," I said, and glanced back. "Just in case they wake up sooner than we'd like." The green land hadn't diminished, but it hadn't grown either. The United Center was still a field of grass, although now with CPD cruisers running crime scene tape and barricades around Chicago's newest park. I gave credit to Yoon for moving quickly. As we drove by, I regretted for an instant that I hadn't had a chance to walk through it, to see what the fairy's land really looked like from the inside. Even as I knew that anything touched by fairy hands was dangerous, tricky and seductive, and usually a trap for the unwary.
"Would you like to tell me about your skills?"
The question jerked me from my reverie. Theo said the word with uncertainty, as if he wasn't entirely committed to the idea it was a blessing and not a curse.
"No,"
I said. I could feel his gaze on me for a moment.
"Okay,"
he finally said.
"It's useful for what it's worth, and I don't think anyone would fault you that."
Maybe, maybe not, but this wasn't the time to debate it. "I'm going to call the house," I said, and pulled out my screen.
"Elisa,"
my father answered. "I need a favor." There was a heavy pause, and I could only guess at the questions he was asking himself.
"What do you need?"
Rain or shine, he was reliable. "Theo and I are en route. If you could have the garage door open and meet us there, that would be best."
"What are you doing?"
"You're not going to like it," I said, "so it's best if we deal with it when we get there. Bring Delia if she's available." Delia was the house doctor.
"Elisa,
I need you to trust me on this. I won't do anything to harm Cadogan, but we need help." There was a pause.
"We'll be waiting,"
he said, and hung up. I glanced back at Claudia, still unconscious on the back seat,
realize there might not be enough macaroni drawings in the world to make up for this one. The gate lifted when we drove up to it, the door into the basement garage sliding open. Theo drove down into the house, then into a space near the door where my father, my mother, and Kelly waited for us. She opened the door for Theo, and he lifted Claudia into his arms.
"Jesus," my father said,
brow furrowed as Theo carried her to the door that Kelly rushed to pull open. She was still limp, hair cascading nearly to the floor. And she looked worse in the fluorescent lights, dark shadows beneath her eyes, a bruise across her jaw, and a paleness to her skin that rivaled vampires.
"Second parlor," my father said,
and I pointed Theo toward the stairs. We followed him up, then into the pretty sitting room, where vampires scooted out of the way to give him the couch. Theo placed her down, then stepped back into the foyer, where we watched her warily.
"Yoon's not here yet?" he asked. "He's on his way," my father said. "Stuck in traffic."
"Delia's on her way too," Kelly said. "She was at the hospital."
In the meantime, my mother stepped forward, checked Claudia's temperature, her pulse.
"Alive, but unconscious. I really don't know how much we can do for her outside the castle. Her power, her magic is tied to place."
"She was at the church?"
my father asked.
"She was,"
Theo said, arms crossed as he looked down at Claudia.
"Guarded by two fairies. She was bound, unconscious." "And the fairies?"
my father asked, the tension clear in his voice.
"Alive," Theo said, "but displeased."
My father nodded.
"Ruadon did this," I explained. "He wanted to get her out of the way in order to bring their kingdom back."
"Their kingdom?" my mother asked.
"The Green Land," Theo said.
My parents' stares were blank.
"I don't understand," my mother said. "The Green Land is a place. It can't be brought here, deposited here."
"That's no longer the case," Theo said,
and pulled out his screen. They watched the United Center become hills and flowing grass, the fairy mound in the middle of it all. My mother's face, already porcelain pale, seemed to lose all remaining color.
"They did it," she quietly said. "But how? How could they do it?"
The question was quiet, as if she was speaking to herself, had forgotten we were there.
"She took us into that world," my father said. "And it's a world of magic. By logical extension, perhaps they could bring that world here."
But he didn't sound convinced.
"Liege," Kelly said, "what are we going to do with Claudia? This may not be a popular opinion at the moment, but she's dangerous. I don't know that we want her in the house."
"I agree."
We looked back to find Yoon in the doorway, Petra behind him. They were becoming Cadogan House regulars, and there were no shifters in their wake on this trip.
"She shouldn't be here," he said. "I realize you didn't have any better options at the time, but her being here is problematic."
"It is problematic," my father said,
then walked to the window and looked out, hands on his hips. He did that when he was trying to figure out an angle or a solution.
"But I want her here."
"Liege," Kelly said, "I'm with the Ombudsman. It's dangerous. If they figure out she's here..."
"They may leave her be," she said. "If Ruadon wants her out of the way, she is out of the way. She's our problem now, which actually works for him. She's dangerous," he added. "No argument. But Chicago is disappearing before her eyes, and she's tied to that magic somehow. I want her where I can see her." "I could overrule you," Yoon said.
"You could try,"
my father said. "And I mean that with all due respect. You could cite the deal with the city, and I would cite the sovereignty of this house."
He glanced around at the other vampires in the foyer.
We fight when we must, and render aid when we can. She will be guarded.
A long moment passed, and then Yoon nodded.
Dearborn will be told you made an unassailable legal argument regarding the sovereignty of your house.
My father smiled approvingly.
So I did.
Then he looked at Kelly.
Increase security outside the house. Double the guards.
Liege, Kelly said with a nod.
When Delia arrives, ask where she'd like to treat Claudia. Perhaps the guest suite or one of the empty novitiate rooms would be best. Restrain her, and put two guards inside, another on the door.
And video feed into the ops room, my mother said, just in case she gets creative with the magic. A corner of Kelly's mouth lifted. Sentinel, she acknowledged.
She wakes up, or stirs magic, or anyone disturbs the house. I want an immediate report.
Liege, Kelly said again. We'll let you know when everything's in place.
My office,
my father said, and we followed him down the hall. 21.
The fairies at the church?
Theo asked when we were in my father's office and the door was closed.
In custody, Yoon said. They're on their way to the brick factory, but for now are refusing to speak.
If they were willing to depose their queen, they'll probably stay silent,
my father said. Yoon nodded.
I suspect you're right, but at least there too we won't have to deal with at the immediate time.
What happened to the people? I asked.
What do you mean?
My mother asked. The parking lots around the United Center were empty, so there probably weren't many people in the building, I said. But there might have been guards, maintenance staff. There was no one, not a single person in the Greenland, at least the parts that we could see. What happened to them?
We're thinking it's kind of phase shift, Petra said. The Greenland is a world of magic that exists in, for lack of a better term, a bubble, outside our normal physical realm. The fairies want the Greenland here, which would require an immense amount of energy. They draw on the power of the ley lines, and they make the shift. They switch the Greenland for our world.
And, theoretically, Chicago goes into the bubble,
Yoon said. Exactly. An exchange of matter. When the United Center is replaced, it pops into the bubble, along with anyone else who happened to be there at the time.
So they're alive, I said, and felt a flood of relief.
They're alive,
Theo agreed, but I didn't like his somber tone.
But their entire world is now the boundary of the United Center. No contact with our world, with those they loved.
Wait, Yoon said, holding up a hand.
If the conjunction is in Grant Park, why did the Greenland appear at the United Center?
We aren't sure about that either, Petra said. But we have a theory. She looked at me.
You said the fairies at Grant Park didn't have guns.
Right, I said. Knives, bows, that kind of thing.
So no modern technology.
I opened my mouth, closed it again.
Yeah, you're right. And I knew where she was going.
They didn't mean to disappear in Grant Park. They were trying to work magic, to bring the Greenland forward, so that's why they had bows and swords and tunics.
Petra nodded, obviously pleased I'd gotten the right answer.
Exactly. We think Grant Park was a failure. They wanted to pop the Greenland into place right over the conjunction, but they couldn't make it work. Instead of using the ley line's power to move the Greenland in, they moved themselves out.
Into the Greenland? I asked.
It's possible, Theo said. We've been up and down the ley line's tracks, and we haven't been able to find them.
He looked at my mother.
Claudia was able to shift you into the Greenland, and they're able to shift part of the Greenland here. It stands to reason they can shift themselves, too.
United Center may be another error, I said. They tried again to pull the Greenland here, this time without the conjunction, and they only made it halfway.
They got the Greenland, Theo agreed with a nod, but not in the right place.
There's no ley line near United, Petra said, but Claudia was at the church. That might have been enough of an anchor to make the switch happen there.
Why are they failing? My father asked.
This is big magic, Petra said. It would take skill and expertise to make and control.
And Ruadan is young, Yun added. He's discarded their queen, who's lived long enough to have seen the Greenland when it existed in our world. She'd have been an asset to the process. Instead, they pushed her away.
She probably told them not to do it, I said, looking at my mother. It's her realm, right? If she thought it could be done correctly, wouldn't she have already done it?
Probably, my mother said. The office door opened again, and Kelly stepped inside.
Claudia? My father asked.
Nothing yet, she said. She walked to the monitor, switched the view from the map of Chicago to the 24-hour news station, and we watched grass creep slowly up Lakeshore Drive. Traffic was stopped, and the grass inched toward the vehicle in the back of the line. Then the grass reached the tire, and the tire began to disappear, like a drawing being methodically erased. Trunk, back seat, front seat, engine, tires. The car was subsumed, along with everyone in it, and the grass still crept forward, the stalks undulating in a breeze that undoubtedly smelled like salt and thyme. People realized what was happening, began abandoning their vehicles, confused or screaming, and running to get away from the danger that crept toward them. The ombudsman's screens began buzzing, and then the office phone began to ring.
Yun pulled out his screen. It's Dearborn. I'll be back.
He stepped into the hallway.
We have to evacuate Chicago, Theo said. There's no avoiding it.
First, I said, we have to talk to Claudia. While Yun talked to his boss, Theo and I walked upstairs to the room where Delia watched over Claudia. Delia stood in the hallway outside the closed door, bright pink scrubs a contrast against dark skin and hair, chatting quietly with one of the assigned guards.
How is she? Theo asked.
She's stable, as far as I can tell, but she's away from the castle, far from magic. She's not fading as quickly as she once would have because of the egregore's infusion, but she won't last forever. She needs to be with her people. At the moment, her people are trying to destroy Chicago, I said. Delia didn't look the slightest bit fazed by that announcement, which was probably because she was a vampire, a physician, and a member of Cadogan House's staff. I'd bet there wasn't much that surprised her anymore. I presume you're here to make sure she doesn't involve herself in those efforts?
We'd like to talk to her about it, I said. Has she said anything about what's happening?
Not that I've heard. She's been in and out of consciousness. I'm not certain, but I believe they dosed her for transport, and then relied on her absence from the castle to keep her weak. I'm going to get some supplies while you talk to her, she said. I'll be back. She walked down the hall, and we waited for the guard to open the door. Two more stood inside, one human, one vampire. We need to ask her some questions, I said. And she might not talk with you here. Can you give us a few minutes? The human looked at the vampire, who nodded.
We'll be outside.
That's fine, thank you. Then the door closed behind us, leaving us in silence. The room was small, with pale walls and wood floors. There was a simple wooden bed, a nightstand, a dresser, and a bookshelf. Doors that led to a bathroom and closet. Most rooms had the same layout. Simple accommodations for the Cadogan vampires who chose to live in the house. Claudia lay in the bed in the same dress we'd brought her in. She was still pale, but her color seemed to have evened out a little. Her eyes opened. She looked at me.
You brought me from the church?
We did. You're in Cadogan House. Ruadan attempted to depose you. He's trying to bring the Green Land to Chicago. Her eyes opened wide and she tried to sit up, but her arms had been tied to the bed with leather restraints. If she were stronger, I suspected she'd be able to use magic to unbuckle them.
They cannot.
They are, I said. They've shifted it here, or parts of it, into two places in the city.
No,
she said with desperation, and dropped her head again.
Bringing it here will not cause it to thrive. I have told him so many times.
What do you mean it won't thrive? Theo asked.
The Green Land should not exist here. It exists only in its realm. While that realm has touched the human world before, it is to be separate. It should remain so.
She turned her head to look at us.
If you are speaking true, he has done a great wrong. Pulling the realm into this world stretches the warp and weft of our world and of yours. If that fabric is pulled too hard, it will tear. A hole will be wrought, and place and time will mix.
She swallowed hard.
That cannot be allowed. You must convince him.
I don't think they're going to be open to what we have to say.
Theo's voice was dry.
Make them understand. Keep the world as it is. Keep the Green Land hidden away. That is the only way you will save your city.
How do we do that, Claudia? I asked. Help us save your people. But her lips went tight. You'll tell us they're creating a danger, I said. But you won't help us stop them?
They are mine, she said, and turned her head away. Helping their destruction would be treachery and betrayal.
They will destroy the Green Land, I said quietly.
You are a bloodletter, she muttered. You would lie.
I'm a bloodletter who saved your life, I reminded her, and then recalled how much fairies loved bargains. I am owed a boon. She looked at me, and there was ferocity in her face, her cheekbones sharper, her lips thinner, her eyes a void of darkness. Not just a beautiful queen or frail regent, but a creature of magic and power and terror.
The ephemeris, she said, looking away again as if disgusted by her weakness. He found it in the Green Land. It tells of the rivers of magic and how to make use of them.
And then her eyes closed again.
The mayor will be instituting an immediate relocation of Chicago residents,
Yoon said when he returned,
beginning with the neighborhoods closest to the, we'll call them intrusion sites. Centers for those displaced will be established using the protocols established during Sorcha's attack. The Illinois National Guard will be called in.
The pack may also be helpful, my father said, or what remains of it. And the other masters may be able to assist with the relocation efforts. They also have experience in large-scale disruptions.
We'll contact them, Yoon agreed. Can you work with the delegates?
We will, my father said. We can house any who wish to stay here, and assist those who want to return to Europe.
And no need to discuss the city's prior arrangement with Cadogan, I thought, because the houses are already involved in the peace talks. Riley should be released, I said, gesturing toward the monitor, which still showed images of the grassy LSD. It's obvious this is bigger than him, that he was set up by the fairies.
I've talked to the prosecutor. They aren't willing to release him because there's still no physical evidence linking the murder to anyone else. For the moment, we have to focus on the fairies. They don't get to destroy Chicago, and they don't get to send its people into magical exile.
He looked at Theo.
Where are we on that? Right this way,
Theo said, and gestured for us to follow him to the conference table, where a thin, open box held a stack of thick paper sheets with illuminated letters, careful script, and small sketches.
Claudia told us Ruadon found the ephemeris in the Greenland. Turns out,